Starting our number two, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. I'm Jim Rome. I'm in Southern California. If you missed hour number one, you missed the way that hour ended. And predictably, some of you are coming in here to jump Tony in Phoenix for the way he sounded during that phone call. Let me start you off. Frank writes on X, Tony in Phoenix breathing harder than Tiger after getting nice for the first time since his bout of, quote, abstinence. Ken on X, quote, Rome, wow. Tony sounded totally comfortable on that call. Signed, Alvy's Daily Prize Picks segment.
Dude, now.
Hey, listen, y'all rushing up in here to crack on Tony, do better. Let's see you do better. He at least picked up the phone, lobbed me a telephone call, put himself out there. Not only put himself out there, didn't get off to the best start. Yeah, I'll grant you this. He was breathing pretty heavily. But he finished strong. Tony's one of those dudes that once the game gets longer, he gets stronger as the game goes on. And by the end of that game, my man was running downhill. So do better. Instead of see, this is the problem I have with so many of you clones. Instead of trying to do better or make it better, you're more than content to lay out and just crack on somebody who actually did. That dude actually came up in here in the arena. Not only got through it, but got racked. Yeah, you want to lay out and you want to crack this guy. All right, do better. Pick up the phone and do better than that guy did. Because that guy at least did it. 1-800-636-8686. All right, obviously you know where to find me on X. Also, hit me up via email, Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Coming up later on this hour, Bob Herrig. He is an author of a new book about Tiger Woods. I want to get his thoughts on what he thought about Tiger this weekend. And we'll talk about the Masters. We'll talk Scottie Scheffler. Also, coming up later on, Jeff Brohm, the head football coach at Louisville. Meantime, new hour, new topic. Let's talk UFC 300. Did you watch that? Did you throw down for that? Because coming in, it was billed as the greatest night in mixed martial arts history. We saw it promoted as such. In fact, they promoted that over and over and over again. So when you see something like that promoted like that, there's no way it lives up to the hype. Except not only did UFC 300 live up to the hype Saturday night, it damn near Wembenyama'd it. In other words, exceeded and smashed all the impossible expectations. No joke. I'm going to say top to bottom, that was the greatest card ever assembled in MMA. And it showed up, and it showed the hell out with 13 current or former UFC champions applying fists to one another's faces all night long. But you know who I'm going to start with. Start and end with the one guy I've been talking about. It's because I know even those of you who are not really into it, you've seen the highlights. You've seen the highlight of all the highlights. The ice job that I'm pretty sure is still trending as we speak.
Ice!
I'm talking about Max Holloway. This dude, and follow me on this before you react. This dude is straight up the new mega superstar in the UFC. And before you diehards come at me with Rome, what do you mean the new megastar? What do you mean the new mega superstar in the UFC? At Blessed MMA has been doing this thing for more than a decade now. Rome, wake up. Yeah, I know. What I'd say to all of you is easy. Pump the brakes on coming at me, bros. Yes, I am well aware of this guy, his resume, what he's accomplished, and what he's all about. I know this. Even before he set foot inside that cage Saturday night, this dude's already a Hall of Famer. One of the greatest featherweights of all time. One of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters in the UFC. No dude has applied more fists to more faces than Max had in his 29 UFC scraps. But again, despite all that, life is different for him today. Way different. Much different. Because even that far into a Hall of Fame career, and he's already in, he's already done enough to get in, Max Holloway is a mega bleeping superstar and a legend. A legend coming in, but even more of a legend coming out. What's bigger than legend? Find me a word to better describe or that's more significant than legend, more significant than icon. I mean, I'm the wordsmith, and I'm having trouble finding a word to describe it. He was a legend coming in, but he comes out of the cage a whole new level with that ice job. Because I'd have to say, and I mentioned it earlier, I think that's the single greatest moment in UFC history. That knockout of Justin Gaethje, of all people, might have been the single greatest moment in MMA history. Remember, despite being that legend and that icon, literally for weeks, and this is key, literally for weeks, if not months, as great and as respected as Max is, the overwhelming opinion coming in was that this dude was making a mistake. A big mistake. A big mistake in moving up in weight for the BMF title fight against a bad mother bleeper in Justin bleeping Gaethje. I mean, if ever there was a modern day warrior and a guy willing to die for it, I mean, live and die on the sword, right? But if ever there was a guy that epitomized that, it's Justin. A dude who delivers extreme violence in an extremely violent sport in every single fight he has ever been in. I'm going to argue more so than any fighter in the promotion's history. Like the last time out, when he knocked out Dustin Poirier. A dude that Max lost to in his last attempt at 155. This is why so many people are saying, Max, don't do it, dude. Do not do it. This is a big mistake. Max, we know what you're about. You don't need to prove that. This is not a good idea, Max. Don't do it. And Max is like, He didn't listen because he wanted it. This is what separates these guys. This is what separates the uncommon from the uncommon. He wanted to be that guy. He heard it all. And the more he heard it, the more he wanted it. He wanted to become a legend. Kept telling the world as much in the promotion leading up to the fight. Kept saying, gladiators do not go around asking to step on a scale before they fought back in the day. So what I'm talking about is that was an enormous risk he took, but not as big a risk as the one he took at the end of that fight. Big risk, big bleeping reward. That's always been his approach. Again, this dude is uncommon even among the uncommon. Who the hell does what Max Holloway just did? Who the hell, and if you haven't seen it, who motions one of the most dangerous strikers, one of the most violent strikers in the history of the world to the center of the cage to engage in an exchange of all-out haymakers at the end of a fight that Max had already won? He was already ahead on the scorecards. Who does that? Max Holloway, that's who. And in a sport of the ultimate gladiators, I'm not sure how many others are willing to even take that risk. As I mentioned, did you see the reaction of his peers cage side? Other alphas, other champs, other great fighters. They were cage side. They were right there when they saw it happen. I've never seen other alphas look so stunned. And these guys are guys who've seen everything, done everything, been a part of everything. I mean, I love both these guys. I love Holloway. I love Gaethje. But for a minute, Gaethje, and I love this guy, one of my favorite fighters ever, for the reasons I mentioned. For a minute, I thought my dude was dead. I mean, it's one thing to get knocked out, but anytime a guy falls face first onto the canvas, man, that is not a good sign. Again, Holloway had no business engaging Justin late in that fight when the clapper has signified there were only 10 seconds left. Straight up insanity. He'd already won the fight. Not even Justin's corner would argue any differently. 99% of all fighters would have raised their hands up, circled the ring, and not engaged. Not Max. He's not like anybody else. He looked right at the bigger Gaethje, pointed to the center of the ring, then got in there and started firing, trading haymakers. You've all seen it. In case you haven't, it sounded like this.
Holloway shows some mortality. Look at this. Holloway just told him. Stand right. him right here. There it is. Just slapped him.
My goodness. Clean as can be. And the accumulation of damage was too much for Gaethje to take. Holy smokes. And this
was... Holy smokes is right. I mean, that is some goosebump bleep right there. I watched it probably 20 times, and I would have watched it more if I wasn't such a big Gaethje guy. Literally, that's the only way Justin could win that fight. Max was doing him a favor. Like, dude, come here. Come rip a win that I already won, and let's just exchange. But no, he caught Justin with one of the best right hands of all time and created possibly the greatest moment in MMA history. When you consider what he did, instant, mega, super bleeping star when he was already an icon and a Hall of Famer. Dana White said it perfectly afterwards. Dana White is in the business of selling holy bleep moments, and that was the biggest holy bleep moment of all time. Add the fact that he could barely walk, too, because Justin beat the hell out of his legs. And it's even more mind-blowing that he was able to pull that off. And while some of you are coming at Justin because, well, that's what losers do, you're clowning a dude for getting knocked out. Man, you take that crap out of here. I hate that. I hate that. That's a perfect example of having absolutely nothing better in your life to do if you're going to hate on that guy. That dude is a warrior. Max smashed his nose with 1 second left in the first round with a kick. Seriously, it looked like he got hit by a sledgehammer, and he still fought on another 4 rounds. I'm no doctor, but I don't think I need to be a doctor to diagnose that was a destroyed beak. Dude had to then breathe through his mouth for 4 rounds, and he still didn't stop. Man, I couldn't respect this guy any more than I do, Justin. A gladiator who fell on his sword. But as far as Max, though, I'm telling you, man, this dude, how could he at 32 and 30 fights into a UFC career just now be getting started on his new world superstardom? That last 10 seconds, that's how. Because this dude dared to be a legend. And a legend is what he became. And now everybody is in play for this guy. Another run at the featherweight title, like he said he wanted. One at the lightweight strap. And Islam, maybe. Another fister with Volk. Hell, he said he'd even take another shot at Conor. All these things are wide open now for Max. And speaking of Conor, Dana made it official. Official after UFC 300. Finally, Conor McGregor is going to come back and fight. And he'll be taking on Jim Rome podcast guest 306, Michael Chandler, at UFC 303 on June 29th.
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker! The king is back!
Conor, it kind of is a surprise, actually, dude. It's been a while. It's been a while since you fought, and it's been even longer since you won. So it kind of is a surprise. But that'll be his first fight since June of 2021. Man, what a time to be a fight fan. What a time to be a fight fan. That was one of the greatest moments ever. And by the way, there were so many other great moments. I just spent an entire segment talking about one moment and one fight. There were so many other great fights, so many other great moments. This guy's on it. Scott in the 716 writes, Kayla Harrison will be one of the best UFC champions of all time. Her physique is Dadonis. Like,
look at, he looks like a Dadonis.
I like Holly, but I wish she would retire. Scott in the 716. Kayla is a beast. Did you watch what Kayla Harrison did to Holly Holmes? I'm like you. I'm a big Holly Holmes fan. And I'll never forget what she did to Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey actually is Jim Rohn podcast this week. Kayla Harrison, she's a monster, man. She is huge. And like Ronda, has the judo background. Man, she ragdolled Holly. And I've got nothing but respect for Holly. She just ragdolled her. Hey, Jimmers. Holloway calling his shot reminded me of one of my all-time favorites. Arturo Thunder Gotti. Going toe-to-toe with Mickey Ward back in the day. Throw them hands, yo. The only thing more amazing than that take is who sent me that take. Abigail? Abby in San Diego. I had no idea, Abby. I had no idea. Yeah, man. Gotti. Gotti definitely was in wars. Every time out, a war. I just didn't expect Abby to reset that. At Dan Mount Sports, Tony breathing harder than I was, signed the chick from Rome's Christmas party. All right, for the last time. It was not Rome's Christmas party. It was the company Christmas party, the broadcast corporation I worked for back in the day. And she was going around telling people that she wanted to get into the adult film industry. To which I said, you don't get into that industry. You end up in that industry. I'll leave it at that. And if you want to end up in that industry, get in your car and point it towards Chatsworth or Van Nuys or essentially anywhere in the 818. Just look for a big dirt area with a mattress on the ground.
818 for life.
All right, still ahead. Bob Herrig is going to join us. He is a Sports Illustrated golf writer. He's written a book on Tiger Woods that's out now. And we'll get his thoughts on what he saw. Hey, get up in here. That's like not a request. That's kind of a command at this point. There is so much to talk about. 1-800-636-8686. Best call goes to the front of the line. In fact, best call, no waiting. Hit me up. Listen, it's very important at this point, right, to feel good. You want to feel good because it affects everything. And then you get to experience your best life. You can do so with Relief Factor, and it can help you feel better in your everyday life. Relief Factor, it's a natural way to help fight pain. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that helps your body fight back against occasional minor pain. It's 100% drug-free, and Relief Factor was developed by doctors searching for a better alternative for relieving pain. Relief Factor uses a unique formula of natural ingredients like turmeric or omega-3s to help reduce or even eliminate everyday minor aches and pains that you're experiencing. Whether it's your neck or your back, joint or muscle pain, Relief Factor can help you feel better. Relief Factor doesn't just mask pain for a short time, it helps to reduce or even eliminate it. Relief Factor helps support your body's natural response to inflammation. In 3 weeks or less, you will know if it's working because you'll feel the difference all day, every day. I was sent Relief Factor to try, and I've been taking it every single day, and I do feel the difference. Relief Factor isn't simply about feeling better. It's about living better, living the life you want, doing the activities you love. Over 1 million people have tried Relief Factor. Give it a try for yourself.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So, clones, one quick question, then we'll get right back to it. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so great? Well, there is something to be said for a family business which stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper. You can actually see the quality right through their iconic Clearview packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use just the best ingredients from their lean strips of beef, seasoned with top quality spices to their real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And it comes in 4 mouth-watering flavors: old-fashioned, classic beef jerky flavor, exceptionally tender, smoky, and delicious, teriyaki with the yellow label, where Old Trapper turned the flavor dial to 11, hot and spicy with a spice so nice you'll want to snack twice, and peppered. tender seasoned beef covered in cracked pepper. It is a cold beer's best friend. Grab and go with a 4-ounce bag or load up with an 18-ounce bag where there's enough for the whole team. If you don't see it, ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? So the Lakers are in the playing game. It would behoove them to lose the playing game. What they don't want to do is beat the Pelicans and have to deal with the defending world champs, right? The Nuggets own them. They've beaten them 8 times in a row. So there's Ears and some of his devices for making the regular season more interesting and then the postseason, when it's very clear it would behoove the Lakers just to lose that game. Like, if I'm Anthony Street Clothes Davis, I'm staying in my street clothes. You don't want to win that game. Hey, Jimmers, I know how Billy Joel feels. Lights out! Signed, Justin Gaethje. Unwore using the octagon mat as smelling salts. Allen in Manitoba. I'm telling you, I understand, like, when you pay for one of those pay-per-views, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get violence. You're going to get, it's not for everybody. You know, if you're at all squeamish, that is not a sport for you. It's a violent, violent sport. But even in that sport, that ending was so jarring and so stunning. Even those who know what they signed up for, you could tell, were a little bit like, whoa, dang. Like, that, you could feel the vibe of the place. Like, normally it's super electric, and it was, but you could feel it almost a little subdued. Like, dude. Like, people were in shock. It was that electric and that violent and that stunning and that jarring. And like I said, it always is when somebody falls face first, and especially that guy. At John Chat 1, Jimmy, they were just giving the piano man a little test of his own in abruptly cutting people off. Hey, Rome, what's worse, getting knocked out with 1 second left in a fight, or getting the plug pulled on the piano man, or not being able to get out of a timeshare? Scott in the 716. All right, Alvin, I need you to do a little work here. I will answer that question. What's worse, getting knocked out with 1 second left in a fight, getting the plug pulled on the piano man, or not being able to get out of a timeshare? Hold on, Albie. Let's do these things one at a time. And why don't we determine what is the worst of the three? What's worse, getting knocked out with 1 second left in a fight? All right. Or getting the plug pulled on the piano man. Or
live from CBS 4. This is your news now.
We did not edit that. That's how that sounded. That's how that went. Or not being able to get out of a timeshare. Listen. Who said anything about not being able to get out of a timeshare? You might be able to get out of a timeshare. That's the whole point. Call my man Wesley. He's gotten 30,000 people out of timeshares. I'll bet you of the 30 grr, most or all of them thought that they couldn't get out of their timeshare. So that's off the list. So it comes down to the first two. What's worse, getting knocked out with 1 second left in a fight, or getting the plug pulled on the piano man, if you are the piano man? I'm going to say, of those two,
live from CBS 4, this is your news now.
And I'll tell you why. As I mentioned earlier, Justin Gaethje had already lost that fight. Max Holloway gave him a chance to steal and win that fight. So Justin actually was happy about that. Not happy with the way it ended, but he's like, all right, good. Because if anybody can land one bomb, one haymaker to rip a fight, it's Justin Gaethje. Now, definitely by far of the three, the worst thing would be to be the piano man in your 100th show in Madison Square Garden in the middle of the Piano Man and having them rip you right off the stage. This guy here nailed it, too. This guy nailed it. Tim in Waterford nailed it. Quote, the live show wasn't even live. According to the set list, there were a few songs cut out of the middle. See, that's, to me, the worst part. Now, I've never produced a show of that magnitude, so who am I to judge? But if I'm not mistaken, they taped that concert like 2 weeks ago. They had plenty of time to edit the concert two times. You know what I'm saying? They had plenty of time to edit the concert two times, and that's what they came up with. Having to rip the Piano Man in the middle of the Piano Man to kick the local news. They knew.
Live from CBS 4.
That wasn't live. It wasn't live where they had to make this terrible decision. You know, kind of like me. I'm not saying this is apples to apples. See, I'm doing an interview with a great guest. And say that interview is, maybe it started a couple of minutes late. Or maybe that interviewee is just awesome. And I'm up against a hard out. And that interview is just going. That dude or that gal is just flowing. And they're in the middle of a great story. And then I'm at, 5750. And it's like this gnarly, awkward moment. What are you going to do? It's live. That concert wasn't live. They had it in the can. That's why that makes no sense to me. You got to get that song in. I'll give you an example. Like I said, Bruce Springsteen. You don't cut him off during Born to Run. I'll give you another example. You don't cut Bruce Springsteen off during Jungleland. There's just some songs that are totally identified with the band. You don't cut The Who off during Baba O'Reilly. Or Alan Parsons, right, Head? You don't cut Alan Parsons off during Baba O'Reilly, right, Head? Oh, so close, Head. Nice try with that.
The biggest event in the history of all radio. I mean, no jokes aside, any genre, news, sports, whatever. This is so unique and it cannot be replicated. Yeah, annuals usually last like 4 or 5 years usually, and then they peter the hell out. We're at 28, going strong as ever. It never, ever fails. The electricity starts flowing the second Alvin hits the Alan Parsons Project song.
What?
And oh my gosh, it's on. I
think it is. James Kelly's still going to war. Like, he's just blowing me up right now. It was a good take. Yeah, it was until you invoked Alan Parsons.
It's the Alan Parsons song?
The Alan Parsons song. Nothing hits. Dude, nothing hits like Baba O'Reilly for the smack off. And James Kelly's just like rolling, even for him. He's functionally illiterate. And James Kelly to this day is blaming Alvin. Alvin set me up. Alvin set me up. Hey, Alvin, can you shoot over to Tommy's spot real quick? It's important. We have to acknowledge this one time and one time only just to put this to rest. James Kelly, quick to point the finger. We got a guest next, but really quickly, dude, did you set him up?
Okay, so in that morning of Smack, whatever that day
28,
was.
Smack Off 28.
He's like, hey, man, what's that song the Chicago Bulls in their heyday? I'm like, Alan Parsons Project? And he's like, yeah. Like, why do you need to know that? He's like, oh, for this. Just whatever. And like, he cut me off and then he went on his way. And he thinks I should have been the one to correct him on what he was asking me, which is
absurd. When you had no idea what he was asking you.
It's just out of the blue. It was a G-chat message. What's that Chicago Bulls song? I'm not supposed to read his mind. I have things to do.
Quote, I'm not a bleeping jukebox. Hey, James Kelly, you want to know how wrong you are? So wrong that Alvin just delivered a perfect exchange. Alvin has never sounded smoother, more confident, more lucid, more coherent. You just got your ass roasted, brah.
Thank you.
He says, dude, he answered your question. What was the Bulls song, the Bulls theme song back in the day? Alan Parsons. You didn't say, what is the opening song that we use for the last 28 years for the Smack Off? That's not what you asked. And then you want him to fall on the sword because he didn't, quote, correct you. He thought he answered your question because that's what you asked, dude.
Thank you, Alan.
All right, I got to get out. Don't ever bring that up ever again, Head. We're good now. Alvin just set the record straight. Time now for a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on the Infinity Sports Network.
That's true. Let's get right back to it. We begin the interview portion of the program. I am Jim Rome. We are joined right now by a golf writer for Sports Illustrated. He is the past president and member of the Golf Writers Association of America. Previously covered the sport for ESPN and the Tampa Bay Times. He is the author of a brand new book entitled Drive, The Last Legacy of Tiger Woods, which was released on March 26th. We are joined right now by Bob Herrig. Bob, it's great to have you on the program. How are you?
It's an honor, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, Bob.
Thank you.
Yeah, me too. Really, really happy to talk to you. Listen, before we talk about the book and Tiger's challenging weekend, let me start with Scottie Scheffler and his dominant performance at the Masters. He became just the fifth Masters champ with multiple wins at Augusta by three or more strokes. What does earning his second green jacket, Bob, and just his fifth Masters represent for the world's number one?
It's just more validation of how great he is. He's been sort of proving that week in, week out for the last year and a half without exactly the victories to show for it. He's won three times now in the last 5 or 6 weeks, which is terrific. But he had gone a year without a win despite sort of dominating his ball striking, his stats, his scoring averages. He has a scoring average last year that was in the realm of what Tiger used to do, you know, like historic. But he was struggling with his putting, and he wasn't winning, and so he wasn't getting the accolades. Now he's going to get the accolades. Now we're going to be talking about, can he win the Grand Slam this year? And even though that's crazy, it's maybe not, because the guy's so good, and he's just there. It was almost inevitable that he was going to be there. And then, of course, he watches everybody else sort of fall apart on him.
Bob Herrick joining us. It's a good point, Bob. Like, when you talk about it, it sounds crazy to mention the Grand Slam. Like, how much separation do you see between him and the rest of golf's marquee names, especially with so many stars now playing in relative obscurity, maybe on the LIV Tour?
The stars are all kind of struggling except for him. I mean, Roy McIlroy, who's number two in the world, wasn't a factor. John Rahm, who won the Masters last year, was way down the list. Colin Morikawa, who played with him in the last group and won two majors, has been struggling most of the year and is actually a little bit of a surprise that he was up there, and then it just didn't work out for him there. You know, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas missed the cut. Max Homa had a really good tournament. That was maybe a turning point for him. He's not done very well in the majors. And obviously Ludwig Åberg, I mean, playing his first major, that's a huge confidence boost for him. I mean, that guy played in a Ryder Cup before, and he played in a major championship, which is pretty impressive. And he's got a lot of good to take away from that, even though he wasn't able to get it done. But the rest of the guys that we know just haven't been performing all year, and it just makes you wonder if that divide will get even greater.
Bob Herrick joining us. You know, Max Homa, I was so happy to see him play as well as he did. He faded a bit yesterday, but he did finish in a tie for third, and that was his second straight top 10 result in a major, so I was really happy to see that. Ludwig, who you mentioned, I mean, this dude was at Texas Tech a year ago as an amateur playing in his first major. That was amazing. So when you think about Tiger Woods, you know, you wrote the book that we'll talk about in a moment, but he set a new Masters record on Friday, Bob, with his 24th consecutive made cut, but then he followed that by shooting an 82 on Saturday, his worst round ever at Augusta National, and then finished with his worst 72-hole score in a pro event. Afterwards, Bob, Tiger said the appearance was, quote, a good week. How do you view it? Do you agree with him on that point?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see it as a good week by his usual standards. I mean, Friday and Saturday were sort of the epitome of the last 10 years for Tiger. Friday was gutting it out, playing despite all the things that he's been through. I mean, he shot 72 on a day that was blowing 40-mile-an-hour gusts, and the low score of the day was was 69, only one score below 70. He made the cut by five shots. I mean, everybody was thinking it was going to be a struggle to make the cut. He was five shots inside the number. He beat so many good players, to the weekend. But then Saturday was what he's been going through for so long. And it appeared to me, Tiger never really gives it up, but it appeared to me it was back problems this time. It wasn't so much the leg. He looked like he was walking pretty good, especially for that golf course with all the hills and as strenuous of a walk it is. But he flinched a couple times on shots, and it made you wonder if he was even going to make it. And that's the thing he faces. Like, can he get through 72 holes at this point of his career? He looked really good for 36 holes, and the back flared up on him Saturday. And it appeared that he wasn't quite out of it yesterday as well, that some of those issues were still there. He only made one birdie. That's kind of a sign that he's not all there if he's only able to do that.
Bob Herrick joining us. So, Bob, your new book, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods, is essentially a look at his career and viewed through the prism of his historic win at the 2019 Masters. You could have pursued any number of angles with which to write that book. Why did you decide to use that tournament and that time?
I think it's a fun debate, but I think you could argue that that's his best win. Of the 15 majors, obviously he's had some pretty big ones. The first Masters winning by 12, the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines where, he had a shattered ACL and it turned out two fractured tibia in his leg, and he still won in a playoff over Rocco Mediate. And he won the U.S. Open by 15 shots. I mean, those are incredible victories. But in 2019, Tiger wasn't that guy. He was 43. Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and Xander Schauffele and Francisco Molinari, who had beat him the year before at the Open. And those guys didn't fear Tiger anymore. They knew the struggles that he had been through. He was 2 years removed from that spinal fusion surgery. And so I thought a deep dive on just what all that went into that win was going to be interesting. And what it revealed was really his whole career has been these sort of driven moments. I mean, Tiger has immense talent, obviously, and incredible skills, but a lot of people have incredible skills and they waste it. They squander it. They don't work at it. And Tiger never did. I have numerous examples in the book of times where you thought he might not have done what he did, but he had a little something extra. I think he has something that most of us don't have, which is a willpower to push on, and he just won't say no or take no. And the cut streak, for example, 142 straight cuts, didn't miss a cut for 7 years. I mean, nobody's halfway to that in his era. It's just something that people look at that and they go, that'll never happen again. People might not even get a third of the way there. It's such a great accomplishment.
So, Bob, that said, is that why he's still out there? I mean, you talk about his drive, but given how difficult it is, how painful it has to be, what is driving him to continue to put in the work and put himself out there? Does he really believe that he could still be competitive and maybe even win one more?
He said it on Tuesday, last Tuesday. He said, if everything goes right. And I think that's probably a good way to look at it, if everything goes right. Because when you put Tiger over the golf ball, when he stands over the ball and hits it, it's still world class. He can hit his irons as good as anybody. He hits his driver out there plenty far. His short game on Friday was incredible. But the problem is you got to walk between shots and you got to do it for 4 days. You really have to do it for more than that. You have to do it in the practice rounds and you have to be preparing for these tournaments. And he's put himself at such a disadvantage because he doesn't give himself, he played 24 holes. He played at Riviera in L.A. That was it, and Scottie Scheffler, Scottie Scheffler played three tournaments and won two of them in the time that Tiger was sitting out. It's hard, and then you throw in his age. But what is his motivation? I mean, there could be some commercial motivations, keeping his name out there. It helps his brand, those sorts of things. But I also don't think Tiger wants to embarrass himself, So I do think he's got this drive to want to try to do it again. I mean, maybe it's just to have another magical moment. It doesn't necessarily mean a win, but a great performance or a really good result. And the thing that we're not quite sure of is, can he improve? I'm talking about his health. Can his leg get better? Can his back get better? Because if he has to keep going through these stops and starts like he's doing, I think that's going to be very difficult.
Right. He made the point that he wanted to play the rest of the majors this year. I find it hard to believe, but, you know, we'll see. He is the author of a brand new book entitled Drive. It's the last legacy of Tiger Woods. It was released on March 26th. He is also a golf writer for Sports Illustrated. He is Bob Herrick. Bob, really appreciate it. Great to have you on the show. Great to talk to you. Bob, thanks so much for that.
Thanks, Jim. Have a great day. I appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Bob Herrick joining us. So what do you make? His point is, when Tiger's standing over the ball, he still looks great. He's still a great striker of the ball. He's still long enough off the tee. He's still good on the greens. But physically, can he hold up? You know, Tiger made that point that I want to play in all the majors this year. I find that hard to believe. Well, I don't find it hard to believe that he wants to play in them all. I find it hard to believe that he would play in them all. You know, that thing about, too, his pride. You don't want to go out like that if you're Tiger Woods, if you were the alleged GOAT. Do you want to go out being DFL? Now, if I want to turn that on its head, I could say, yeah, but there's some nobility in the grind. There's some nobility in that he's out there and trying to grind through it and putting in the time and training. Yeah, but he can only play so much. He's training physically to put his body back together in order to play, but then he's not playing very much at all. So how much nobility? Like, I respect it. I do. But how much nobility, if you're that guy, is there in finishing DFL at the Masters? I wonder. He must think it's going to get better. Is it? He's 48. Like, I'm curious. For years and years and years, when I would talk about him in a certain way, you honks would come up in here all belligerent, aggressive about it. And I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. I'm just saying, I want to know, honks, what was it like for you to watch your idol out there grinding to get through it and make it to the finish line only to finish dead freaking last among those who made the cut? I mean, just honestly, I'm trying to have a conversation here with you, honks. What was it like? Jeff Brohm coming up next hour. BBN, let's have a conversation about your new head coach and your situation. It was only like 15 minutes ago that none of you seemed happy with it, and then all of a sudden 22,000 of you packed the arena for it. BBN, you're the next topic. Stay tuned.